Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This week on Brum Eats World.
In my mind, it's just like, why does he keep going to do this? Oh, because life keep coming at him. This isn't him like reading into things.
Sure.
This isn't him being like, oh, I got an F, let me self-destruct. This is every other week he finds out something else about his family.
Sure.
Every other week he gets hit with something else. Like, oh, I have a secret brother. Oh, my father died. Oh, my mom's not my mom. Maybe I'm constantly spiraling because I'm constantly being hit with instability.
And we're learning a lot about how the 90s is treating mental health, because everyone seems to present Sean with this idea of like, just be grateful for what you have. As if to say that he isn't afforded the option of mourning, like these like people who keep leaving him. Like, he's forming these close relationships, people keep disappearing, and like for everyone else, it's like, yeah, Sean's dad took off again. Isn't that crazy? Like, that keeps happening. But anyways, dad, do you want to go? Like, it just feels like no one is putting themselves in his shoes to empathize with him, to the point where it's like, let him have the drink, dad. Like, let's not yell at him. Like,
thank you. Thank you. When the spawn meets world. What up, bros?
What up, bros?
And welcome to Brat Meets World.
When the spawn meets world.
Your Boy Meets World fan cast. I'm Siege.
I'm Tony Coitus.
And we're back again.
Back again. Back in black.
Back in black. It ain't Black History Month, but we heal.
We heal. We heal.
Still heal.
Okay.
Tony, the weather in LA is sunny again.
Ooh, yeah.
We can go outside, walk around. How you doing?
I'm feeling great. Not only is the sun coming back out, the week we're filming this, this coming Sunday, we're getting a fucking hour of sunshine back. And I'm so excited for that. Like, nighttime coming at like 3 p.m. was a severe problem for me, and I'm glad we're past it.
Someone said, you seasonal depression girlies, we made it.
Yeah.
We're on the other side. And honestly, I give it to them. Honestly, I'm so happy the little conversation that we had brightened my day, much like the yellow on your shirt. And I want to say to everyone, we love hearing from you. Let us know how the weather is where you are.
Absolutely.
You can reach out to us at brummeetsworld@gmail.com or at brummeetsworld on all the social platforms. You have been blowing up our YouTubes. Thank you. You have been subscribing to our Patreon. Thank you. You have been buying our merch. Thank you. So hit us up at brummeetsworld on all the places. You guys continue to talk to us. We love it. We are going to get into this episode. Okay. In order to get into this episode, Tony, I think you have to do the tell me about it.
Oh shit. Okay. All right. So here's the tell me about it for Family Tree.
Tell us about it. Sean's whole life was a lie. Met the ghost dad of Christmas past, only to learn his mama used to shake that ass.
Woo! Loving it. Come on, dollar bills, y'all. Okay, this is season 7, episode 12, Family Trees. Sean has trouble dealing with the fact that he doesn't know who his mother is. In a B storyline, Eric throws a surprise party for Alan, but Sean gets an even bigger surprise when the Matthews offer to adopt him.
That's one way to tell the story of this episode.
One way to tell the story. All right, first impressions. Where are you at with this episode?
Poor Alan.
Poor Alan.
Motherfucker just wanted a good birthday. He just wanted a good birthday. He wanted something to look forward to. He's a dad. He's turning 46. He already went through the midlife crisis thing when he had the baby last year. Like, he has so little. And like, I mean, I understand Sean has some trauma to process, but pick and choose your time. Pick and choose your timing.
There's that. This episode is interesting to me because I want to make it very clear. I like this episode. So for all of you who are like worried, I do like this episode, but I'm going to pick this thing apart. I'm going to pick at it.
I was going to say, I'm not a fan of this episode.
Really? See, I like this episode for a few reasons. I'm sorry. I don't know what you want from me. I don't like Corey in this episode. And if that bothers you, I'll look inward because Corey in this episode is a problem. But the episode itself, what we do with Sean, I enjoy. The idea of Alan stepping up and being a dad and all this other stuff, I have my problems with it, but I ultimately like it. I like what we're doing. I like that we have most of the cast. Like, if we're going to do a roll call really quickly, we get Blake Cart back as Chet Hunter. And I literally was like, Ghost Chet!
Ghost Chet.
And then Jeff Manel.
Mm-hmm.
Now is back as Santa. So again, lots of.
Can I just say this? Like, the reason why I have an issue with this episode, first of all, I told you this shit. Go back and listen to season 4. I told you, that Verna was a red herring.
We're going to talk about Verna. We're going to talk about the Hunters. We're going to talk about some things because my whole thing with this is everyone got down on Verna. Now, I will say, you spoiled this for me. I hadn't seen this episode in forever, but in the back of my mind, you mentioned it once and my mind never let it go. So I knew that this was the episode that we find out that Verna wasn't Sean's mom. And I was upset with you because I was like, I would have been flabbergasted had this just like come up naturally. But also, I do not like that Verna is painted out to be the villain when this woman took care of someone else's child for years.
It's too much. Honestly, it cheapens all the storyline of season 4 with Verna and Chet, I think. The idea of, like, there's so many times where we're like, hey, they're not bringing this up from season 4. Hey, they're not bringing this up from season 5. You guys reached in the back of your damn pockets for Verna. Like, this character that hasn't been mentioned in 3 years, as they so happen to point out. And it's like, if we're going to start pulling stuff from the past, why is this what we're doing? 1, 2, we had Sean go through such an arc last season that, like, I get that, like, sometimes people take 5 steps forward, 2 steps back, whatever it may be. But it just also feels kind of like overdone at this point. I don't know. I the fact that this is the Christmas episode, this is the second bummer ass Christmas episode we've gotten in a row. I'm just like, please, why can't we just have a good Christmas episode for once?
I'm not going to lie to you. When I saw that this was Christmas, I was like, what are we doing? Why is this Christmas? Why is this Christmas? Also, Alan is born in December. Is that what we're saying? Like, very weird.
Who the hell knows? His birthday is one of convenience.
Absolutely. So, okay, I want to go back to it, and let's just start with the idea of open up. We have they're planning Alan's birthday party.
Sure.
We understand he will be 46. It's fun to see, and the reason why I want to say all this, we get almost all of the cast together in a way that we haven't seen in a while.
It was like, fun to see Topanga with the Matthews only to let correct. You know that she's now a sister to Morgan. She's now a sister to Eric. Like, she's in the mix.
And absolutely. And this episode also continues to have Corey and Topanga be a couple and like have their own bits and work together. And they kind of like are on the same page constantly.
Yeah.
Even when they're not, they're still like in it together. They're in like their own little side storyline. And then Sean comes in and he's like, hey,
can we pause for a second? When they're planning it, there's this joke about how Alan was a Navy SEAL. I just want to bring that up because it comes in later on in the episode during a different part that
I was going to bring that up later, but keep going.
But no, this is just a point where Eric just chokes Corey For disagreeing with him. There's a lot of like rage that
I think it's the Simpsons approach.
Yeah, it was very like brotherly rage that everyone just kind of rolls their eyes at, and I'm like, are they the kind of brothers that do this still? Like, if it doesn't feel
well, I think this is really important. We establish in Kid Gloves that Alan was in the Navy, and Corey says he was a cook in the Coast Guard. And I was like, did you guys forget your own lore? What's going on? And then later on, Alan says, because I was a Navy SEAL. And I was like, okay, so what you're, like, one of two things is happening. One, you've completely lost the thread and you honestly don't know. And you're saying that it don't matter, which is verified. Or two, you're implying that Corey doesn't know anything about his father.
Or remember how Kid Gloves ended. Kid Gloves was an episode where Alan gave Corey the silver gloves that he got in the Navy for boxing. Corey loses them in the pool, goes swimming after dark to get them, retrieves them, gives them back to Alan and says, I want you to give these to me on the best day of my life. And Alan says, when's that? And Corey says, on the day you give them back to me. My guess is Alan never gave him back to him. he spent some time with Corey. He was like, you know what? Never mind. I'm saving this for Joshua. Someone else is going to earn this.
Absolutely. Why not Morgan? You saying Morgan can't get some gloves? Is that what you're saying?
Well, they made it very clear that Alan is a boy's dad. So,
well, there's that. But then also, to your point, Morgan leaves halfway through the episode. Like during the party, where's Morgan?
They constantly joke, would anyone care if she died?
Where's Joshua, by the way? This is a man's 46th birthday. All of his kids are around. We're talking about him being a great dad. Where's the baby?
Baby gone. Baby had plans. Baby got invited to Eric's party the next day.
So anyway, like I thought that was really important. I was going to bring it up anyway. But so going back to it, Sean comes in and he is like, hey, I got a letter from my mom, Verna. And Corey's like, don't open it. And I was like, okay, first of all, this is like, I'm sorry, y'all. I'm not sorry. You get on my page. You get on my level. Because Corey, I'm not going to lie. I watched this entire thing being like, they continuously tell me that Corey is Michael. And I'm like, I have thoughts because
we're learning a lot.
That he would come in and tell Sean, don't open it, throw it out. And it's like, why? I'm hearing from my mother for the first time in years. Let's see what she has to say. You don't need to see what she has to say. You're doing good. You're in a good place. We're in a good place. Life is fine. Don't interrupt it. Why? Because you're going to interrupt my flow. It's not that you don't need to know these things. It's not like we don't know that you've always struggled with having an identity and family around and all these other stuff. It's purely because Corey is like, you're going to disrupt how good everything's going for me. And I don't need that kind of negativity in my life. And I'm like, I honestly cannot, because it's controlling. And then when Amy is like, yo, maybe we should let Sean open the letter. Maybe he needs it for reasons you can't see. He goes, did anybody ask you?
I don't think anyone asked for your opinion, Mom. I was just like, what? Corey's clearly a kid who's never been slapped in the face.
He is clearly a kid who's never, because she like pushes his face. And I was like, you did it right, because a black mama.
Well, that is a little.
We'll see you next week.
A little season of that. Okay, so one thing I want to talk about with Corey is the show wants us to think like, oh, Corey is just so in tune with Sean that he just knows what's going to happen. Like, he just knows, and like, he's like really looking out for Sean when he's kind of like trying to control the situation. But the argument to that is that Corey could say like, hey, Sean, I see you're really excited about this. Like, let's taper expectations, open it when you're ready. Like, that's not my choice to make for you. But like, hey, let's, you know, just maybe don't expect the world out of this letter or something. Like, just have a conversation about expectations would have been fine. For him to say like, don't open it, tear it up, throw it away, and like getting mad at Amy and Topanga for not backing him up. He snapped at Topanga and said, don't you ever snap at me in public again. Like, what are we doing?
Again, I think the problem is that's supposed to be funny. And I'm like, that's not funny. That's, when you turn to your wife, don't you ever in front of other people. Like, if, like okay, let's play this game. Let's play this game. If a black man did that, would it be funny? Tyler Perry has several movies that say otherwise. And I just think that we should acknowledge that even though it is played comedically, it is not funny.
Yeah.
And I just want to say that it's upsetting to see Corey once again. Now, I will say, if one thing is true, y'all are being true to Corey. Corey absolutely would impose himself. Corey absolutely would say, I know best. You have to listen to me. And because you didn't listen to me, you deserve any kind of disappointment you get. That's Corey's character. Well, true to his character.
Can I just say, and you're right, that is his character. The problem with that being this version of Corey, the reason why he's so unlikable is because, like, let's take Fishing for Verna for an example when we're first introduced. Corey is there to listen to Sean, listen to Verna, mediate something that works between the two of them and help that family, like, be good on its own. He's not really caring about himself. In fact, he's going across the highway back and forth to, like, just help his friend. Like, it's this ongoing joke in the episode. So to have Corey just be this person who's so just like, you're going to ruin the vibe, first of all. And to also just, again, he's centering himself in Sean's trauma with his parents, his family trauma. He's clearly, like, being very insensitive to it at the least. Like, he's just... I brought this up in the previous episode. I don't think Corey is a good friend. He's just the one who stuck around. And I say that because that seems to be Sean's only qualification for a good person in his life, as noted with the chat conversation later. So it just feels like no one's checking Corey for him to, like, have a development in this way at all.
Absolutely. And I agree with you because exactly what you said. I was like, Corey's not a good friend, because a good friend would understand your father died last year and your mother just entered back into your life. Wow. Oh, wait a minute. She just dropped a bomb that not only is she never coming back, which you yourself was like, expected. Okay. Still hurtful, by the way. But also, I'm not your mom. I've been keeping this secret for your dad, for this man who honestly probably never treated me right. And, like, for her to wait until he died, again, it tells me, out of respect for him, I kept that secret. But I don't want to be your mother anymore. Why? I'm being judged for not being the mother that you thought I should be, and I was never your mother. Never my role.
But that's the thing. Verna is not a character in the show. Like, you know what I mean? Like, she's not someone who it's like, oh, this matters to Sean whatsoever. This is such a random thing. Like, I truly just don't see, like, this story of, oh, your dad died, so I feel inspired to, like, let this off of my chest. Like, I just feel like, why wouldn't she just let it alone? Like, she hasn't contacted him this long. She didn't even reach out to him when Chet died.
Here's the thing. I think, well, first of all, she says that she just found out that Chet died. So I think that's what she said in the letter. The letter says, I found out that Chet died, and so I thought I would write you. Mm. She just found out that Chet died. And after she found out that Chet died is when she also says, by the way, I'm not your mother. And you say, you say this doesn't matter. I disagree. B, you say, why now? And I say now because she's like, in case you come looking for me, I know that you have no one else. So in case you spent, just like you did with your biological mother, once you found out, again, once you found out she was out there, once you found out where she was, you went looking for her. And I think for Verna was like, look, in case you come looking for me, I want you to know I'm not your mother and I can't pretend to be anymore.
But he wasn't looking for her. That's the thing. Like, if the show had made it so that, like planting seeds throughout the season of just like, yeah, dad died, but, like, my mom's still out there. Like, just something. Because, like, he wasn't looking for her.
He wasn't.
He had moved on, considering he'd never see her again.
He had not moved on. He just, like, here, you want to know how I know he had not moved on? Because we had never gotten the I'm an orphan speech before. If he had moved on, we would have gotten the I'm an orphan speech earlier. We would have gotten the I'm an orphan speech after Chet died. There is something about it, and I'm just going to tell you this as, like, I mean, you're familiar with, like, having an estranged parent.
Yeah.
There's this idea of, I know you're out there. I don't have to know where you're at. I don't have to know what you're doing, but I know you're out there, and that means something. And one day, any day I want to, I can reach out to you. I can go looking for you. That makes a difference. And for Sean, I agree with you. He wasn't looking for her, but Verna was like, don't come looking. She's like, I need you to know, because A, this was never my secret to keep. This was Chet's. Chet didn't want me to know, didn't want you to know this. And I kept it. And again, I want you, again, like, it's really funny because they are on season 4. So we get, like, mm-hmm. We're able to, like, draw this line. And when you consider, again, everything that we know about Chet and Verna, I think you can't disconnect everything we know about Chet and Verna. Chet is someone who was a swindler, who was someone who was a con artist. He was a sweet talker. Later on in this episode, we find out that Sean's mother was a stripper. He's been married 51 times.
Can I ask you this? If Verna was never Sean's mom, why did she write him a letter every day for a year? Because... if Verna was this person who she... And my issue is not like... I get everything you're saying. Like, that makes sense if we are doing the work to put this shit together.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
As the show sets it up, Verna was this person who, yes, I am estranged, but I think about you every day. I care about you, and I am in constant contact with you even when I'm not around, is how she is introduced to us.
Okay. So here's the thing. First of all, you and I are completely creating fanfic. All this is in our head. We're making these ties. They didn't think about this at all. They barely know whether or not Alan was in the Coast Guard or the Navy. So this is all for us. But I will say, to give anyone kind of like some connecting thread, in my opinion, A, you can care about someone and not actually be related to them. Like, I'll say this. There was a time where I dated this dude who used to babysit these kids regularly. This was like 10 years ago. He babysit these kids all the time. I got to see these kids all the time. When we broke up, I never got to see those kids. And do I like think about those kids every day? No. But also, I do think about those kids occasionally. They were important to me. I'm like, oh, what are they doing? How are they doing? Like, so I can see a world in which, no, I cared about you. You were still my family. I still agreed, no matter what happened, for at least for bare minimum, the first 10 years of your life, bare minimum, I was your mom. That's 10 years. I can see her still feeling that way. And for whatever reason she left, she was like, hey, I need to leave again. And she did, but also at the exact same time, she always has been carrying this. And I think that's another thing. Imagine having to look at a child and lie to their face every day. And she just didn't want to do it anymore. That's how I see it.
Yeah, but like, I don't know. I feel like, you ever watch like Maury or some shit like that? Where like, they're like, and the DNA test is, and like the dad will get news that like, he's not the dad, like the real dad to the baby. Or something like that. And, but there's still like a, well, no, that's my kid. Like, regardless, like, I didn't give, that's not my DNA, but that's my kid. Like, I'm there for that kid.
I think that what we're doing right now is we're equating being a parent as something that you are supposed to want. It's something that you're supposed to take on. Even in this episode, we have Alan being like, who cares how many kids I have? You are my child. Mm. And that is seen as a noble thing. But what if you never wanted the kid? Like, think about it, because the whole reason why I'm saying this, and I was waiting for later, but we can talk about it now. He, Ghost Chat, which we will get to, Ghost Chat says, your mother was a stripper, she never wanted you, but you had a tushy that Verna couldn't deny. What does that tell us? That tells us that Sean was born during a time that Chat knew Verna. And yeah. If we're going to assume, this is an assumption, but if we're going to, that means that Chet was with Verna when his side piece got pregnant and she took on the rest. Do you get what I'm saying?
Can I just say that, like, yes, I get what you're saying. It all makes sense. We, as the audience, as fans, have to do so much heavy lifting to connect. I am truly, like, saying this, like, this episode, I can, I, like not only empathize, like feel everything that you're saying as I'm watching this episode, because I'm doing the work up here. If I am just taking the episode as it is, first of all, I just started watching the show in college because they were in college. So who's this Verna character that hasn't been mentioned in 2 years? Like, it's so odd for them to take this character who hasn't appeared so long, make her such a central figure to the point where it like destroys the life of this. So give us Sean looking for Verna. Give us Sean mentioning Verna's name. Give us Verna's name coming up when Chet dies, after Chet dies, on the road trip. It's never about like, wow, Verna didn't even reach out to me. I'm pissed at her. She like nothing.
Here's the thing. First of all, I will say this is sitcom. Like, I think about the fact that like for years, like think about sitcom, like the one that we use all the time, Friends. Out of nowhere, Rachel's sisters just show up. These are people, are we aware about them? Have they kind of been mentioned? Yes. But all of a sudden, these are full-fledged characters who are in her life and they show up unannounced and you're like, where have you been? It's been seasons and all of a sudden you're here and you're active and you're talking and we're supposed to believe you have history with these people and that you didn't come to someone's wedding or, you know, but like, that's all I'm saying. All I'm saying is—
Can I just say something? If Rachel's sister showed up, and you'd never met her before, Reese Witherspoon's there, and the whole thing is about how, like, hey, by the way, I'm not your real sister anyway. Like, it would kind of, like, don't you need a little bit of connection, like, recent, like, connective tissue in the storyline for the audience to be able to take that journey with her?
Yes, yes and no. And my argument for this is, I do. I think you're right that I could use a little bit of hint of Verna or a little discussion of Verna.
That's all I'm saying. All the points you're making are accurate. That's all I'm saying. I could just use a little bit more.
I agree with you. But I also will say, writer sells this. Like, I don't need to know who Verna is to understand that this is someone who has lost all the people who, or sorry, he's lost all authority figures in his life to him.
Yeah.
Like, he is also, where's Feeny? We'll come back to that.
They couldn't afford everybody. Anyway.
But, like, this idea of Sean being like, hey, again, we don't need to know who Verna is. My mom, who we all don't see, including me, just wrote me for the first time. Oh, she heard that my dad just died. Oh, by the way, she's not my real mom. That's a pal. That's anybody finding out, you can get a random letter from any TV show, and I've never seen it. And if in that episode someone gets a letter and says, by the way, the person who you thought were your parents are not your parents, I would understand that this is a big moment. What I don't see is I don't see any empathy from Corey about this. It's more of like a told you so. And it's not, we're not giving Sean room to grieve. Everything is very, very much like Sean. Let it go. She's in the past. Your dead dad's in the past. Look at us. Look at who we are now. Look at what you have. And it's like, I get all of that. But this dude just lost his father. And out of nowhere, through a postage stamp, lost his mother.
For the sake of time, I do agree. And I do believe Ryder sells this very, very well. And he makes this work, even though there are gaps here. I couldn't help but wonder after the last episode we saw with Ryder, where he's living with Angela and decides that they haven't suffered enough. And I'm just like, does this show know how to write for Ryder or write for Sean where he's not like going through shit? It just doesn't feel like they know how to write a happy Sean anymore without him being dumb. Like, every like joyful Sean story I can recall is due to the fact that he was like being so dumb that he was just like, oh yeah, we're gonna throw this radio thing and oh, Feeny can't see us, we're right in front of him, like playing on that almost Eric level of stupidity. However, now that he's become this brooding, poetry reading, serious, they don't know how to write joyful shit for him anymore. And it's kind of a bummer that like he's constantly relegated to like being the very special episode.
I will say, I agree with you there, because what we do in this episode, we are kind of leaning on the tropes of the characters instead of advancing these characters in any meaningful way. So for example, to your point, Sean has a tragedy, that the whole episode takes over to the point to where Angela is like, business as usual. Sean got message that he's not going to like. He's going to deal with it badly. We all got to respond. Corey is just like, oh, God, no one listens to me. I have to be in control all the time. Eric, I'm stupid and zany. And like it is constantly, it's very, very tropey. So I will agree with you there. I will say that this episode at least tries to bring everyone together in a way that I'm appreciating season 7 doing. And it actually does, it gives a good reason for Sean to feel this way. I just don't think it knows how to let Sean sit with it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And, like, so for example, all right, we talk about this. He goes, I've had three mothers, Verna, Ming Wei, and Elaine McGinty. And first time we're hearing about three moms.
Yeah.
What made Verna special? That's where I'm at with you.
Sure.
Also, we are dealing with 2000s internet. And they are going on the computer like, oh, we found her. How are you doing this? There's no Facebook. There's no findme.com. Like,
this is Ask Jeeves, bro.
Ask Jeeves, where's my mom?
One thing I want to point out is that Jack is the one who's helping Sean. And one of the things, you know, Sean is like saying is that, like, she's the only family I have left. And Jack is like, I'm right here, bro. And then Sean looks at him and very like adamantly states, you are my half brother. And there was something so just like visceral about that. And just that way of like, Jack almost seems like, like, because even if you think about after Chet died, like, he was trying to connect with Sean, it felt like. Like, in all fairness, Jack has been continuously the one to try to connect with Sean, and Sean's always been the one saying, I'm not interested. So it makes sense that Jack kind of gave up on it in a way. But it's also kind of sad when you see Sean so desperate to connect with family, and, like, he's just straight up refusing to connect with this dude who's actively trying to be a part of his life.
Absolutely. And that's, I like this. I like this idea of, first of all, Jack says something along the lines of, we could, like, instead of searching for your mom, we could search for your brother. Oh, wait, I'm right here. And I was like, oh, wait, what you don't know, oh, man, we may have forgotten is, actually, we could do that search and still find people.
Yeah.
Because he has other siblings. So there's that. But then also this idea of Jack being like, hey, reminder, I came here to find you. Yeah. I am your family. It's also funny because I was watching a TikTok earlier today even, that was like, what's black mom math? And it was like, you don't have no half brother. Your brother's a whole person. And I was like, so to see him be like, you're my half brother. And it's like, no, that's your whole brother. That's your whole brother. So anyway, I understand Sean's desire to want to find this other person, this other mom. And then for Topanga, again, I like this is what I do like about the episodes. We're getting so many interesting dynamics for Topanga to speak up and say, Sean, you have a tendency to push people away during these times.
Yeah.
I was like, that's good. I really do like this.
I do like that. Like, the episode does a very good job of showing Sean's support system and how crucial his support system is to, like, prevent him from, like, self-destructive like tendencies and things like that, but I also just don't feel like I got anything that I didn't get last season when his dad died. Like, I don't know, like, I don't know that this advances this story for me at all in any way. Like, I think
it does, because here's the thing, Sean becomes an orphan this episode.
Yeah.
That's important. Like, and the problem is, and I think the problem that you have is, the episode doesn't let you sit with it. Like, it doesn't allow Sean to grieve. I'm like, you guys, stop. Like, stop, pause. This dude lost both of his parents this week.
It's devastating when he's drunk and he says to Angela, like, we don't have mommies. And it was just like, oh, like, it's so sad. And everyone's just like, you got to stop drinking. And it's just like, this dude is clearly going
First of all, let's talk about that. Because, like, we're at Allen's, we're at the Matthews house.
We'll circle back to the Eric Allen shit.
We will. I'm just saying, like, we're at the Matthews house. they, you know, we're pretending not to have a birthday party. It turns out there's a surprise party. Corey says to Sean before he leaves, don't forget my dad's birthday.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, he's not going to show up. But he does show up. Sean shows up. And at first I was like, what's going on? And they're like, oh my God, everyone's just acting. I was like, I'm confused. And I was like, everyone, oh, is he supposed to be drunk? Because we don't give him a beer or anything. Yeah. And I was
they
like,
don't
oh,
show him drinking, but they insinuate that he is. It was such like a Disney workaround.
Yeah, but also like you could have given him like a bottle. I only get literally at some point in time, like I think Jack eventually says something like, you're drunk. And I was like, oh, because I was confused. What are we saying here? But all right, Sean is drunk. Mm-hmm. And why would no one be like, yeah, I get it. Like, don't be like, Sean, what are you doing? We told you not to act like this. How could you be drunk? The orphan child?
Yeah.
The orphan child who grew up around people who drank their feelings away? That, we're judging that one? You can say, hey, Sean, like Angela's approach of like, let's go for a walk.
Yeah.
Let's not make this happen.
Like, and she also didn't make him feel shitty about himself. She wasn't like shaming him. She was just like, yeah, let's just go for a walk. Let's get out of here. Yeah, like,
that's fine. But everyone else being like, here, now, is like, yes, because that's when I got the information. Here and now. And I'm dealing with it. And I honestly would have liked had Alan, instead of just being like, I'll be your dad. I'll take you in. I got room for kids. Mm-hmm. And kind of like throwing them in his face. You're like, again, it's solution based. It's not empathy based. And I think that's my problem. And I want people to understand. I think that it is an altruistic move. However, I do think you should allow people to grieve. You should allow people to feel their feelings. I would have loved it if Alan would have been like, when Alan was like, hey, come with me for a sec. I thought maybe Alan would be the one to take him to the cemetery. How great would that have been? And Alan would have been like, hey, I want to do something for you. Just you and I.
That would have been great.
For my birthday, the one thing that I want is for Sean, you to come with me for a walk.
Sure.
And him going and him taking him to the cemetery.
It would have connected the birthday storyline. It would have made it great. I love that. I love that. Or, because what I truly... Really quickly.
Or... I just thought about this. You know who knows what it's like to not have parents? Alan.
Yeah.
You know whose main caregiver was always on the road and unreliable? Alan. You know whose father we never hear about other than the fact that he was working class?
Mm-hmm.
Alan. So if Alan would have been the one to take him to the cemetery and be like, I actually know what you are going through more than you realize. I've been you. I was you. I am you. And I need you to know that, hey, I don't have a mommy either. I don't have a daddy either. But look at how my life turned out. There is a way for you to move forward and have support, but you just have to, A, grieve and allow yourself the opportunity to feel sad about that, but also not think that you're alone. Like, that's it. I would have loved that.
Yeah, I like that. I go back and forth because I truly don't think that, like, anyone should be offering Sean the solution to this thing he just found out about. Like, I feel like he would, of course, refuse anything that anyone offered him in that moment. I like the idea of Alan kind of talking to him, walking with him, taking him to the cemetery. But I also feel like this reinforces the idea that everyone needs to template themselves to the Matthews. And if Alan found a way out of his situation, you could too. But I feel like it's getting dangerous at this point.
I agree. But I'm saying that it's at least a better, like, again,
it's a better connection between the storylines, if anything else.
Alan, because Alan is Sean.
Yeah.
We know that. We know that Sean, like, again, Alan's mom, always on the road, never there.
Sure.
Just like Chad. Alan never talks about his dad. Alan did go into the military in the same way that Sean almost went into the military.
Sure, sure, sure. There's a lot of overlap, yeah.
There's a lot of overlap. And if they would have, specifically on Alan's birthday, which would have been a great way to parallel him to actually reframe, oh, I'm getting old. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It goes from, oh, I'm being old to look how far I've come.
Another similarity, just one thing I want to point out between Sean and Alan, when they were doing the Real World parody in season 5, Sean goes back to like an apartment in Philly and was like, yeah, this is where I lived with Jack for a little while. It's almost the exact same place where Alan takes Corey in that Average Corey episode. Yeah. And it's like, so you guys basically come from the same block. And you're right. Like, it's like, I am you, but I'm the happy version of it. That I think that really could have worked. I want to rewind a little bit to something that we skipped over. And I just want to throw it out there real fast. When Corey suggests that Sean is going to self-destruct, he says that he's going to devastate himself and everyone around him. And Angela so casually says, as usual, to the point where I was like, ooh, first of all, that was a little chilling of a response to say to that. Like, what other Chet qualities and tendencies is Sean revealing in his relationships? Angela's living with Sean for the first time, and like, we don't know like how he's displaying himself when no one's around. Like, it felt like a line where I was just like, as usual, how often does he fucking do this? Because we haven't seen him drink and go crazy since season 5, the one time he did it, and then he said he was never going to do it again.
I don't think it's just about the drinking. I think it's, in general, it's the self-destructiveness. It's the I'm going to leave and no one's going to know where I'm at of it all. Like, because think about it. He says, I'm leaving. And I don't mean I'm like, he's like, I'm leaving, but I'll be back. Like, he even understands. The whole show is saying that, like, when Chet died, he disappeared.
Yeah.
Whenever Sean gets, he almost joined a cult. You know, like, Sean is someone who, whenever things are going bad for him or whenever he feels alone in the world, he is self-destructive. And to your point, Corey goes, ugh, he's going to do it all again. And Angela's like usual. And it's like, but why is he doing this, you guys?
Well, why are you letting him? Like, also, like, you're like, he's walking away. And like, later in the episode, Corey follows him. He's like, huh, I knew you would. But I'm like, how come no one followed him before he made these bad decisions?
Well, also to that point, like, you said earlier, let him, like, you can't control this dude. Let's not have it be solution based. But also, in my mind, it's just like, why does he keep going to do this? Oh, because life keeps coming at him. This isn't him, like, reading into things.
Sure.
This isn't him being like, oh, I got an F, let me self-destruct. This is every other week he finds out something else about his family. Sure. Every other week he gets hit with something else. Like, oh, I have a secret brother. Oh, my brother died. I mean, my father died. Oh, my mom's not my mom. Maybe I'm constantly spiraling because I'm constantly being hit with instability. Like,
and we're learning a lot about how the 90s is treating mental health, because everyone seems to present Sean with this idea of like, just be grateful for what you have, as if to say that he isn't afforded the option of mourning, like these like people who keep leaving him. Like, he's forming these close relationships, people keep disappearing, and like, for everyone else, it's like, huh, yeah, Sean's dad took off again, isn't that crazy? Like, that keeps happening. But anyways, dad, do you want to go? Like, it just feels like no one is putting themselves in his shoes to empathize with him, to the point where it's like, let him have the drink, dad. Like, let's not yell at him. Like,
thank you.
Like, or Alan brings him in the kitchen, is just like, pours him a little bit of whiskey and was just like, you've been through it.
Or Alan poured him a cup of coffee.
Yeah.
But again, not judgmentally.
Yeah.
But just like, hey, I'm gonna get you some coffee. How about we have some cake? You know what I'm saying? Like, there's something along this line. Because, all right, let's do this really quickly. His father comes and goes. His mother comes and goes. Oh, wait, she's not his mother. His father, by the way, dead.
Yeah.
His other guardian, Turner, motorcycle accident, never seen again.
Stacy, Alan, Eddie, gone.
Stacy, Eddie, gone. We know that he purposely avoids the trailer park because that's not where he feels like he needs to be. So he's cut off old ties with old family members and old community.
Such as his uncle.
Angela and him just got back together.
Mm-hmm.
Brother came out of nowhere.
And he doesn't even like
them. Close. They're not close. And then the only other support system that he has, Corey's family. Corey just got married and he is already feeling abandoned by Corey as is.
Well, Corey's also hasn't been a great support system to Sean in general. He's just there.
Exactly. So What do you want from this kid who just found out the only other authority figure? The two authority figures in his life, three, Alan, Amy, and Mr. Feeney. And even though he loves them and respects them and he's there for Alan's birthday, they're not his dad.
Yeah.
They're, you know, not what? His mom.
I think about, you know, I've been friends with people who have lost parents and things like that. And like, especially in school, like, take some time off. Maybe they take a semester off. Maybe they just stop going to college and they just get a job and they circle back to it later in life, or they don't at all. Like, people need time to process shit. No one ever says to Sean, hey, I'm proud of you. Like, you're still in school. Like, you seem like you have your life together. Like, all of this comes from his conversation with Ghost Dad. And I can't wait till we get to the Ghost Dad portion of this, because I have so much to say about that being the third act of this episode.
We're going to go there.
Okay.
Okay. Perfect. So a few things. One, we had the you're not my dad. I don't have a mom or a dad. I'm an orphan. Then he says, I never had parents. And I think that to me, that is so important. Mm-hmm. I never had parents. Yeah. Yes, my mom is not my mom and my dad is dead, but I've never had parents. That is so important. And that kind of, again, opens the door of like what he's dealing with. Again, let the boy drink. I'm not saying that it's a good solution. It could be a good solution, but I'm saying that it is understandable. And someone should be like, getting drunk, getting wasted, not the greatest, but also you're hurting. And I get that.
I just want to say this because in the first drunk episode that they had in season five, they paint this thing about like Chet was an avid drinker. He drank all the time. This is the second time we're seeing Sean drink. The first time was a very special episode. They either need to make drinking way more casual, or they need to approach Sean about having a potential problem, because it seems like drinking is only given during that extreme where it's like an extreme thing. And it's like, well, it doesn't have to be that. But if Sean has that problem, then let's have that conversation. But it just doesn't seem like the show knows what to do with that.
Absolutely. We've never had an AA meeting for Sean. So did he relapse, or is this the first beer he's had since high school? At which point in time, if he's a college student, he's doing pretty well.
Yeah. Or I would even say that I think you could have had that same scene without him being drunk. Have just been like truly just hurt.
Yeah, truly just hurt is allowed. But then, okay, so let's talk about this. So he leaves because Alan's like, I'll be your father. And he's like, I just need to leave really quickly. Which again, I think that people need to understand. It is great for Alan to want to do that, to offer that. But that's not a substitute. It just isn't. Mm-hmm. And so for Sean to walk out, I was like, ooh, outdoor set. It's Christmas for some reason.
They had to throw in Santa to remind us it was Christmas.
Exactly. And then Sean has this whole idea of like, leave me alone, pushing people away. Oh, wait, you're not who I thought it was. Santa moves. Corey's right behind him. He's like, hey, I am here. Now here's the thing. Sean says, let's go to the cemetery. Corey says, I thought we'd get pie. Funny joke. But then Sean says, no cemetery. And Corey pushes back again. And I don't want to go to the cemetery. Dude, can you put your wants and needs aside for a second? Like, I need someone to explain to me why Corey being obsessed with getting pie in this moment is helpful to Sean.
You know what? To be fair to Corey, I did not read it as that. I read it as him saying, my friend is drunk and he's saying he wants to go to a cemetery. And I just can't see that being a good idea for him. And it wasn't until Sean like says that he wants to visit his dad that Corey maybe changes his stance a little bit. But
no,
I just
he doesn't.
Like,
he doesn't change his stance. That's my whole point. If you had that where he goes, oh, okay, I'll come with you. Oh, I didn't know this was to visit your dad. Like, oh, no, he leaves because Corey says, I don't want to go there. It makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, as if Sean isn't existing in an uncomfortable state. That's my problem.
I would just say that whole scene is kind of pointless. Cut it. Cut the scene. Give us more conversation. Give us, like, something else.
Or, again, make it Alan.
You make it Alan.
Jack.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah, yeah. Make it
like,
someone.
Make it Angela. Like, in all honesty, why did it have to be Corey? And I know why it had to be Corey, because Corey's the boy, Boy Meets World, blah, 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 blah. But Corey is not supportive. And if him not being supportive is going to be the through line, then we don't need him there.
It also feels like Corey was able to handle these conversations way better when he was younger. Like, yeah. He multiple times he would have situations where he was talking to someone who was upset, Sean, who was upset, and he was able to say, like, no, this is a hug. Like, you know, like he would get really like show love in a very obvious way. And now it just doesn't seem like he knows how to navigate it, or he doesn't care to.
Exactly. We talked about this, and I will, like, we listen to our old episodes. We pay attention to the through line. What if Corey is just honestly exhausted with Sean? And yeah. Again, this isn't a good friendship anymore. I'm not going to lie. Think about it. Corey's just kind of like, oh, wait, you have another tragedy? I'm supposed to be celebrating my dad. And I can't even celebrate my dad.
Let's be fair to Corey, because what I will say, the one thing that no one ever says to Sean is, hey, have you thought about therapy? Because for someone who is struggling with severe trauma, yes, it is very hard for them. We should empathize with them 100%. But your friends cannot take the place of a therapist. Your friends aren't the person who people who like deserve to be trauma dumped on all the time. And I'm not saying that Sean does that. I'm just saying that in this circumstance where you have a friend who is incurring so much trauma and not speaking to a professional about it, it would make sense that it would negatively affect their social circle. That's all.
I agreed. Do you know what they do tell Sean? Get a job.
Get a job. Be productive for the economy.
Not Corey. We didn't tell Corey go get a job. No. But we did tell Sean. I think that's important. We'll come back to that. All right. So then we go to the cemetery and we get Ghost Chat. Now, I'm not going to lie. Do I need Ghost Chat? No. Do I like Ghost Chat? Yes, because I like Blake Clark. And this is a good thing to do. My only thing is we do get exposition here in a way that there's no way Sean would find this out.
It's so pointless. You might as well give me a dream sequence. None of the revelations that come out from Chat can be assumed to be truthful.
Agreed.
Who knows if his mom was a stripper who took one look at his butt and said, I couldn't do it. This is all in Sean's head. Or we are seeing an actual ghost come back from the actual dead resurrection to give Sean this information. What are we doing? What are we doing?
Yeah, I agree with you. And here's the thing. I think that we can't do that, which again, I'm not going to lie, is why it being Jack makes sense.
Yeah.
If Jack is the one who shows up afterwards. Because again, we can see that this was all in his head. And
do you
it's
think
about
it's
family.
Do you think it's canon that his mom was a stripper that left after he was born?
Here's the thing. I'll say this. I think the show wants me to believe that, but I can't take it as fact because it came from a ghost.
It came from a ghost.
It came from a ghost. I can't take here's the thing. Again, if you had given me the idea of like we're standing in front of Chet, and if every answer Chet gave wasn't exposition, but like I could see it being like, well, Sean's brain filled in the blanks in this conversation.
You know what would have been great? Okay.
I listen.
Jack is the one who follows him, not Corey, right? Jack says, hey, I got some information about this woman. Here's a letter. If you want to open it, you can. But like, just like, hey, like, clearly it is. And then he reads it at the tombstone for Chet. And that's how he gets the information. Because then at least I'm like, okay, fine. There's some resolution to the storyline. But surely it's like he got drunk, talked to a ghost, and decided everything was cool. Like, what is this storyline?
I agree with you. Because let's talk about it. Like, we learned that according to Ghost Chet, Sean's mom was a stripper that Chet was in love with.
Was in love with a stripper.
And like, so there's that. But also was with Verna at the time. So again, I think like this idea of canonizing Chet, but being mad at Verna doesn't sit well with me. It just won't. Because again, he goes, I'm proud of you, Dad. You stayed.
No, he didn't.
No, he didn't.
In fact, that's the thing you yelled at him about that gave him the heart attack was that he never was around.
He says, you did good with me. You're currently drunk in a cemetery. No, he didn't.
And you're like looking at everything. It's like, this is what trauma does. This is what abuse does. This is what all these things do, where he's just like, well, I'm going to love you and almost put you in the same level as like an Alan simply because you were around the longest out of everyone. And it's almost like no one takes this time to just be like, oh, that's kind of sad that like he has to like build up Chet to be this person he wasn't, that they can have close father and son talks that they never had when he was alive. Every like meaningful conversation he's had with Chet has been after he died. He had one with Ghost Chet when he was on Road Trip last year. So like, it just feels like all of this is in Sean's headcanon. It's not realistic to the story. I mean, it doesn't go along with the storyline. Like, I don't know what this means for Sean, which is why I question if this episode matters and if they should have done it. Because if this was how they were going to have the resolution be, it just feels like it was for nothing.
I'm not going to lie to you in the sense of, given what the episode is telling us, I have my own headcanon.
Yeah.
I have my own arguments. We've made our own world outside of the Boy Meets World writing that ties all of this together. But I do understand that this is a television show and it was never supposed to be examined this closely. But as someone who has been rewatching, as someone who loves long form storytelling and getting to know people and serialization, and you are the ones who brought back Alan being in the Navy, and you are the ones who brought back Chet and Verna and all this other stuff. If you want me to remember all of these things, I am not wrong to want to fill in the blanks.
Yep.
And I'm just going to say that for you to say to Chet, I'm proud of you, you did the best that you could, when we know that Chet swung by, the only reason why you saw Chet when he had his heart attack was that he happened to be swinging by because he needed a place to stay before his next grift. It was not to see you. It was not to come celebrate anything for you. It was him swinging through town, and by happenstance, he happened to die around you and you were able to be there. Otherwise, you wouldn't have been there. And even then, every single day, it seems, you find out something new about your dad's secret life that you knew nothing about. And you want to look at him and say, you did good, Dad. I'm proud of you. No, you don't get to do that and then blame Verna, the woman who was never your mom, for leaving and taking her own life back.
It's so telling to me that the story was about Corey, right? Like seeing the life of Corey. But doesn't it say something that his brother, his best friend, even his wife for the most part, like no one is like living up to their potential. No one is exactly happy with where their life is at. Like it feels like the show is telling us in so many ways that like the influence of Corey seems to have done more harm than good. And I know this is kind of separate from like what we were talking about, but just the idea that Sean has had to deal with all of this heartache, I wonder if it would have been as hard if he wasn't constantly comparing his life to the template.
Very good point. I'll say this.
Yeah.
Really quickly, I just want to wrap up the chat there, which is, when I will say, for all of you listening, when Chet says, you're proud of me, and he goes, I am, and Chet goes, huh, well, finally I can get a little sleep. I was like, okay, that touched my heart.
Yeah.
That is sweet. That is a really sincere moment. I loved it. I also looked and it said, Chet was born 1948, died 1999. So Chet died at 51.
Yeah, he was young.
He's young, but he's older than Alan.
Yeah, sure.
Died at 51. So like if this was a year ago, he would be 52, which means he's 6 years older than Alan. And there is something interesting about the idea of Alan being the more put together parent, even though Chet was older.
Sure, definitely. One last thing I just want to say about this whole sequence, and I noticed that from the point where Corey was following Sean up until the end of the cemetery scene, is that we lose the laugh track. And the show kind of turns into like a single camera. You have Sean and Corey doing their normal bits, like, oh, I was hoping we could get pie. Like moments you would expect the audience to laugh, and they don't. And so they have to kind of, it turns into almost like a play, the way they have to go back and forth. They have to change the rhythms a little bit. And even when Chet and Sean are kind of chit-chatting at the grave, like there's jokes being had, but it's just, it has a different feel to it. I think it works. I think the episode is so solemn that like you can accept that there's not the laugh track there, that it just disappears for a portion of the episode. And I just actually, that's the one thing I did like about this episode was that it just felt like something different. It felt like single camera for a little bit.
I will say, as much as I like it, I also feel like it feels like it just keeps going.
Or Sean, is that the dream sequence of it all? Perspective?
No, not the changing perspective, even though, I mean, that's an argument. I like that. But we can go with that. I'm saying that the story itself, this episode, it's like Sean gets a letter from his mom. Then he finds out that it's not his mom. Then he goes looking for his mom. Then he's drunk. Then he has a frustration with Corey. Then he goes to the cemetery. Then he has a conversation with his ghost dad. And again, we could end at any one of these points. Then he goes back to the house and he's a family with Alan. Then him and Alan have a conversation. And it's like, why? Like, we could have stopped. We could have stopped. Like, either one of these could have been the end of this storyline, and I would have been way happier. And it just feels like it just keeps
going. I will say, it did feel like a very long 20 minutes. Like, whatever the episode length was, it felt long. Which this episode, some of these episodes are like, oh, we need more. We need so much more. Like, I wish we had more time. And this one, I was just like, let's wrap it up.
Anything else you want to say?
Not about this storyline, though.
Okay, I'll say this. And it doesn't matter because I'm always like, oh, for those of you who are like mad about what we're saying with with Corey and Sean, I will say there is a point where Corey goes, you would be my brother. Do you get how cool that'd be? And Sean says, you've always been my brother.
Yeah.
And there's a way of looking at it to your point. To me, Corey keeps going, hey, you can have the American dream. You can be the template. You can just assimilate into our lives and take on our identity, and then you'll be good. You'll have everything. You can be adopted. And I like that Sean is like, I have my own family.
Yeah.
Guess where my family is? In that cemetery. I'm gonna go visit my family.
And this is so true to what we know of Sean. Like, so many times the Matthews have like stay with us and we sneak out the back window or something like that. He's never felt at home completely with the Matthews. He loves thinking of them as family, but like not his family.
But also, I think that there is something about, like, again, to me, I use the word assimilation for a reason.
Yeah.
It's this idea of, if you come with us, everything will be solved. And Sean is like, no, it won't be, because I won't be myself. I'll be a Matthews. And I'm not a Matthews. I'm a Hunter.
Yeah.
I have my own bloodline that I need to
incorporate. And he like hugs Jack to insinuate that he's going to like rededicate himself to that relationship, which we'll see. one last thing, like right at the end, he says to Angela, he says, like, promise me you'll never leave or something like that. And I was just like, oh, buddy, like, you're never going to catch a fucking break on this show ever.
and again, I think that that's something that we should, like, this is... Sean has reason to be drinking. That's all I'm saying.
He got reason to be drinking.
Okay, let's talk about the B storyline.
Alan's birthday. Well, yeah, like I said, like, my first impression of this was that, like, it's so sad that Alan just couldn't enjoy his damn birthday. Like,
I agree.
We can get into, like, the hijinks of Eric trying to plan this birthday, but, like, that was kind of my main walkout. It was just like, wow, like, we so rarely check in on Alan and Amy, and, like, in all fairness to Alan, a lot of focus has been on Amy within the last year with the baby and the pregnancy. Not that, like, he handled that situation the best way, but he just needed something to be his. Like, I just kind of felt that. And I'm sad that he didn't get it.
I would have liked if, like, Alan would have had, like, some jokes to be like, I mean, it is my birthday. You know, like, yeah. Like, if Sean's having, like, oh, like, well, can I get a drink? Like, you know, something to where Alan is, like, there and it's his party and he is a little, like, I mean, I get that you lost your mom, but I mean, it is my party. You know, like, something like that would have been fun for Alan to like acknowledge that he doesn't have anything for himself, and this party was supposed to be it. And I want to talk, because like there's a scene where Alan and Eric are on the couch and they're like playing around and like they're father and son again.
Yeah,
and it's really fun because like right now Pod is. They are doing season 4 where they talk about the fact that they're constantly pairing Rusty and Will up. And so it's funny to see Alan and Eric have a scene together where they're not just talking down on Eric.
They have a tickle fight.
They have a tickle fight. And I think that's great. They're father and son. And then I'm not gonna lie, at the end of the episode, when Sean gives his gift to Alan, first things first, when did he have time to make that? Did you make that ahead of time?
No, I think that's something from the trailer that he originally made for Chet that he's giving to Alan.
Ooh.
It was a child. The handprints were his childhood hand, like his child prints.
Are they?
Yeah, it was like one of those little.
Small, they could have been.
Yeah. No, it was like one of those little art projects you make when you're a kid. Yeah,
it is one of those art projects. But I thought he made it. I thought like it says to my dad, and also to the idea, like to that. I'll say this: no matter what, the gift works. Whether it's a re-gift, although it's like, why would you re-gift something to someone and not show it? If we would have shown. If Ryder would have said, I went by my parents' house and I got you this or something, I agree. They make it seem like he decided to do this.
Yeah.
And again, I just want to say, whether or not you went and found it or you made it, it's still a gift that takes time to make. And we need some kind of explanation on how we got here. That's all I'm saying.
But yeah, I assumed it was old right away, but and I only say that because I had a very similar one that I had made for my mom when I was in like kindergarten or something like that.
Yeah, no. Here's the thing: I got the. To me, I need you guys to let us know. Does it look? Because I know what it looks like. It could still be Ryder's hand. Ryder's a really small person.
If a drunk 19-year-old came to me with like hand art. Say to dad, I'd be like, oh, this boy really needs some help. Like, it wouldn't be cute if adult did it versus kid did it.
He does need help, and it is supposed to be cute. That's the point. It's like, no, this is where he's at. This is where he's at. So to me, no matter what, the idea, and also, again, it kind of takes it away if he didn't make it specifically for Alan.
Yeah.
Like if you didn't make it specifically for Alan, then it's not as special. So it has to be made for Alan. It has to be something where he's like, hey, I'm letting you know that I know and I consider you my father.
Yeah, and I think that does mean enough to Alan to matter regardless of when it was.
Either way, it was very sweet. I got very emotional seeing it. I thought it was a great gift. And again, just because it is, it's kind of like the most innocent of gifts that you can get.
My favorite part of the Alan storyline was when Eric's there and he's like, why didn't you throw my party for tonight? You do it tomorrow. He's like, oh, I wanted it to be a surprise, whatever. It's the fake out. And then everyone comes out and says surprise. When Alan jumps up and says, outstanding, he is so happy. It reminds me of like in Parks and Rec when Ron Swanson sees little Sebastian, like that giggle, that childlike, like he really wanted to just have a surprise party. And at least the surprise was like he got that. Like it seemed like it really meant something to him.
Again, also, I forgot about this, but we've already had this conversation where Alan doesn't have good birthdays because of his mom. So again, for him to actually have a party and to be celebrated is a big deal.
Yeah.
I wish we had spent time there. I don't like that. I like that Sean goes, can you do me a favor and yell at me like you would Eric and Corey? Ignore Megan or Joshua because they don't exist.
They do not exist.
But if he said that, I like that he says that, but I also wish that we wouldn't have ended the episode being judgmental towards this kid who just lost everything and being like, oh, you want these things? You want a house? Go get a job. And it's just like, but you didn't even say that to your own child.
Because so it doesn't matter if Corey gets a job. It matters if low-income Sean gets a job. That's why. I really was unsatisfied with the whole ending. The whole, like, can you yell at me the way you do at the boys? That being some, like, big resolution to this thing. It all just felt like it went nowhere and it ended nowhere. And
I would have liked it if they would have just ended with like, yes, but before I yell at you, let's have some cake.
Yeah.
You know, like I don't need him yelling at Sean, telling Sean to get a job on a house he may want in the future. Yeah. That was a conversation, even Corey and Tamika says, that was a conversation reserved for them. But you didn't have it with them. But you want to have it with Sean? No. Instead, if you would have been like, Sean, I will. I promise you, I will yell at you like I would all my other children. But first, let's have some cake. now we have that wholesome moment and we still get to have like this cathartic sitcom wrapping everything up. Things are going to be okay. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, it is what it is.
I mean, I truly like everything we're saying, I'm like, yeah, that would make it a little bit better, but I still don't know that I would love the episode.
I mean, but it is what it is.
A few things I just want to point out before we, just because I know we're wrapping up. I thought it was funny when Corey says to Eric, I like it when you call me Squirt.
Yes.
Amy says to Eric, we used you as a decoy. We all knew you'd be stupid. We wanted to use it against you, which is like kind of a crazy thing for a mom to say to her son. But okay, whatever. Everyone's laughing about it. And one thing we didn't talk about, which inevitably was going to come up during my bra moment. I mean, I can save it. But when Eric tells Rachel to yell, the Japanese are attacking, to insinuate Alan's post-Vietnam PTSD.
I'm going to choose to move forward, but yes, I did watch that and I was like, oh, okay,
what are we doing?
We're keeping this. I will say that I like that. I mean, in an episode called Family Tree, we have family. Like Jack, yep, and Sean are brothers. Eric and Corey are brothers. Eric and Alan are father and son. Amy has children. Corey and Topanga are a married couple who are visiting their in-laws. Like, there is a lot going on here. There is a lot of dynamics. We acknowledge Angela's mom. Like, we have family, and I like that. Yep. And I also like that we have Rachel not having to be sexualized for anything else. We actually include Rachel in the fun as well. So I just thought that was all really fun. Not the kids, though.
Not the kids.
Okay. What is your bra moment? Was that your bra moment?
Yes. Yeah, that's my bra moment. Eric tells Rachel, you know, Japanese are attacking, apparently to, like, again, Alan, PTSD from war. It felt a little racist. I don't know.
No, absolutely.
Agreed. So, yeah.
I will align with you that I feel like that to me is the most bra moment of them all. I also think that Sean's mom being a sex worker or not necessarily a sex worker, but a stripper it feels unnecessary.
It felt very hunchback. It was just like, your mother was a whore. She abandoned you.
Why couldn't she just not been motherly?
Yeah. Like, why does she have to be a stripper is the reason why she couldn't be like, we don't even know that she's a stripper. We can't even say that for fact. Like, it's but true. Can we paint the picture that whole thing was in Sean's head? So that's what Sean thinks he comes from. Like, exactly. That's interesting.
Exactly.
And that's what Sean thinks of a stripper and all that.
Exactly. Like, that's what I was going to say. That was my point. I completely agree with you. Okay. Finny lesson. What's the lesson of this episode?
Birthdays are a disappointment. Almost like, don't expect, like, if you go out with zero expectations, you'll have a great time, but just like, let's be real, like, most of the time you get really excited and it's kind of a letdown.
I'm gonna not try to control you and let your lesson be your lesson. My Feeny lesson of the episode, again, where's Feeny? My lesson of the episode is family is more than just blood, but also it's important to have your own, like, be proud of, like, your own identity.
I would almost argue that the episode almost says that, like, actually family is about blood. Like, it was way more important for Sean to, like, say, like, I want to identify with my bloodline versus being a part of the Matthews.
But at the very end, it says to my dad.
Like a metaphorical dad. I get it. Here's the thing. I don't think you're wrong. I think the episode's kind of all over the fucking place.
Here's the thing. You didn't get any arguments about that from me. not at all. What grade are you giving this episode?
Giving this episode a D, bro. Sorry.
Really?
Sorry. I really don't like this turn for Sean. It feels out of nowhere. It also feels like something that we're not going to hear about for the rest of the season or ever again. Like, why did we even do this? Like, it feels like they were just almost like we need something dramatic. Let's just throw something at Sean. Like, I don't know. It doesn't feel thought through and it doesn't feel actualized. It just feels like we're running out. We're running out of ideas.
So funny that you say that, because A, I think that the fact that it pulls on so many previous storylines shows that it is thought through. But I'm not disagreeing with you. Also, I'm judging this episode as this episode. You're judging this episode in its place in the season.
No, I mean, even in this episode, I feel like it's poorly constructed. I don't know what the hell the third act is, and I don't get any resolution from it.
I'm giving this episode a C+. That's my whole thing.
Yeah, sure.
I think it's not great, but it had enough fun and it had enough heart and it was enough Boy Meets World for me to be like, yeah, I'm familiar with this.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys. So if you, let us know your thoughts on this episode. Let us know where you think Sean's mom is. Let us know what you think, whether about Ghost Chet. And we are going to go on to our Patreon part of the episode where we talk about Singled Out and read some of your letters. So if I had emailed you and contacted you and said that we were reading your letters, this is the part where we're going to do that. And when we come back, we'll do homework. And it's time for homework. But what do you got? It's your time. It's your time.
Like I said, I did see Dune this weekend, and it wasn't the experience that I was really wanting it to be. Like, I was really wanting, like, a wow moment that I was promised, and I just didn't really get that. I will say, though, I went home and rewatched Planet of the Apes, the trilogy. So good.
I love
this trilogy. Like, I think it's so good. Like, in terms of use of CGI, and I think a good example of how to use CGI to advance storytelling, I just think they do such a great job of it. I remember the first time I saw, like, the trailer for, like, the second one where I saw a monkey riding a horse. I was like, that looks stupid. And then I'm watching this movie. I'm like, no, fuck it. I'm in it. I'm in this world. And I think in terms of world building, it does such a great job. The character of Caesar and the evolution of him across the three films from just, like, this, like, you know, newborn baby who has this intelligence to being like the leader of this new tribe and his rise to get there, I think is so Shakespearean. Like, it's just such a great work from like all three movies. So I'm just throwing that out there. If you have time to revisit it, it still holds up. And with the new one in the works, I just think it would be good to kind of circle back to it.
Yeah, I want to make sure you're not talking about the 2001 Mark Wahlberg one.
No, I am not talking about that one. I'm not talking about Michael Clarke Duncan dressed like a monkey. Like, we're recovering from that still.
Okay, so which one is that?
Okay, so the trilogy that I'm talking about is, it starts with Rise of the Planet of the Apes,
2011, and that, like, I was looking for that. I love that trilogy. To me, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, then it's Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and War of the Planet of the Apes. Those to me are three really good. And I am excited for, I think it's Kingdom.
Yeah.
Of the Planet of the Apes.
Yeah. I'm excited for it too. You know, I think the thing that makes this work, and I just want to give some flowers to him, Andy Serkis, who plays Caesar, he's the motion, like, graphics artist who plays Caesar. He also played Gollum in Lord of the Rings. Like, he perfected putting dots on my face, and I'm still going to make a meal out of it. Like, I've seen so many Marvel movies where they turn someone into CGI and it feels like they can't emote anymore, but I've never seen one of his performances where he didn't, like, take me to another place via just his physical movement. And so I just think he's a really powerful performer, and he's done a bunch of other things. He was in The Batman. He played Alfred in Batman, the most recent one, and he's also in Andor as well. So great career.
Love that for you. Okay. So my homework this week, I went down a reality TV hole.
Ooh.
Where at first it started with Couple to Thruple, which is a fantastic, it's exactly what it sounds like. It's a reality dating show where couples go and look for a third. Couple to Thruple. And it is like a, oh my God. I'm just like, it is diverse. It is queer. It is everything that, like, I'm, like, watching. I'm like, this is on television. How are we doing this?
I'm
so amazed. My mind is blown. I never thought that I would see a gay couple fellatiate a third man in their own like marriage bed, like for television. It's crazy.
But it's crazy.
It is. To me, what was really great about it is, A, I like this idea of stepping out of conventional, what a conventional family or coupledom is supposed to look like. They take being a throuple very seriously. There are success stories that come away from this. But it's also like any other dating show, and it's messy. And it's just like, yes, you can do all the things that you usually do, but also bring in diversity. And let's be honest, with 90 Day Fiancé or Love is Blind, it's not like we pretend all this stuff is sacred anyway. So
I cannot wait to try this.
I've gotten so many people addicted. You gotta watch it.
I'm 100% gonna watch it. I've actually never been a huge reality TV person, but I will say that within the last few months, I have been getting it more into reality TV. And so I'm excited to try this.
Just you wait, because that was just the tip of the iceberg.
Ooh.
That led me, while that was on,
little game is just the tip.
The commercials for Traitors.
Watched Traitors.
Addicted to Traitors.
I love Traitors.
Every single one. I have watched Traitors US season 1 and 2. I am currently Traitors UK. And if you think Traitors Australia isn't up on the map, you are wrong.
I haven't seen any of the other countries. I've only seen Traitors US. And I'm like watching actively season 2. I'm so excited. This was a show I did not give a shit, but I didn't know anything about it. I also don't follow reality television is like its own extended universe.
Yeah.
I don't do the Big Brothers or the Challenge. I just started watching the Challenge actually, but like I'm not into the history of it all. But a good game, like a good whodunit.
Yes.
Love it.
My favorite things. It's a good whodunit. I'm getting to watch people and how they deal with lying and how people like there are so many. Like I'll have to talk to you offline about some like season 1, how it resolved.
I haven't seen season 1. I just started watching season 2 because I know it was live. So I have to go back to season 1.
So here's how it happened. I was watching season 2. Just started off with season 2. But then with that, it like I had got caught up. But I was like addicted to this show. So then I started watching the UK season 1. So I could have something else to watch.
Sure.
And then my husband was interested, and I was like, well, no. You have to watch from the beginning. So I started US season 1. So I'm watching 3 seasons at the exact same time. And I just finished season 1 of Traitors last night, of US Traitors. And I'm not going to spoil anything for you, but this is it's a fun game. You are always able to get really interesting. Like you, I don't know who any of these people are.
Yep.
Any of the reality TV shows. I think it's actually kind of interesting that the networks were able to create their own form of celebrities.
Yeah.
They could shuffle around.
Absolutely.
There's that synergy that you're talking about.
And I will say that like in terms of reality television, part of the reason why I really struggled to jump into like Big Brother or The Challenge or any of these other shows was because they kept like, you kept having to know the history of the players and like, oh, these two characters got in a fight like 5 years ago and they haven't spoken since. It's like, I don't have time to watch 33 seasons of Big Brother to find out what's going on. But Traitors is brand new. You can kind of just jump in at every season and watch it as like its own thing, which works really great for me.
Absolutely. And I just Traitors, I'm enjoying it.
Yeah,
I'm telling you guys, it's my new thing. I was like, I'll say this, Peacock has cemented itself in our household.
Peacock, like staple. I love Peacock, bro. They have such good movies on there. All their shows are great. Also, they have all of like the NBC, Can't Miss TV, like all of like the things you want to binge watch anyway. Their old shows, they're there. They have great shit. I love
Peacock. We were talking about what to get rid of, and then we discovered Couple to Thruple and Traitors, and my husband was like, oh, Peacock is staying.
Peacock is staying. It's up there for me. I would get rid of Apple TV over Peacock.
100%. Okay. Yeah. So you guys, let us know what you're watching. Thank you so much. Tune in for our next recap episode, which will be season 7. Episode 13, The Provider. You guys, thank you so much. We want to hear what you have to say. As we always say, check out our Patreon for an extended version of this episode. TC and I talked about a lot of things that we just couldn't include in the full length episode, but we do want to hear from you. We do want to hear what you think about it. Check out our Patreon. Hit us up at Brummy's World on all the places. Tony, close us out.
Guys, just remember to dream,
to try,
and to do good.
Later, bros.
Later, bros.
This episode of Brown Meets World was produced by Siege and edited by Tony Curtis. Brown Meets World is a 2 Free Tokens Media production.
Bye.
Bye. When this boy meets world.